If you enjoy these episodes, please consider donating to help keep this podcast going by clicking on the link in the description of this episode. Also, please give the podcast a 5-star rating and share it with your friends and family. Wednesday, April 16th. The Haydock Commentary on the Passion of Christ according to St. Luke. Christ our Redeemer was truly God and truly man, and being made man by a real union of his divine person and nature to our weak and infirm human nature, he likewise took upon him our infirmities, with the exception of sin. We must consider him as man when we read of his being tempted in the wilderness, when he wept at the raising of Lazarus out of the grave, and here when we read of his praying and redoubling his prayer in the garden, when we find him seized with fear, sadness, and grief. For though as God he could prevent and hinder these passions and affections natural to man, yet he could also permit them to affect his human nature, as he permitted himself to be seized with hunger after fasting 40 days, and so he permitted his human nature to be seized with fear and grief in this garden of Gethsemane. As angels came and ministered to him after his fast in the wilderness, so an angel came, as it were, to propose to him the divine decree that he was to suffer and die for the redemption of mankind. And as man, he is said to be strengthened and comforted by the angel, he who as God was Lord and Maker of the angels. What happened to Christ as man were ordained as instructions for us. We are taught by angels appearing that they were not only ready to assist and wait upon Christ, but that by the order of divine providence they are also ready to assist us in our temptations and afflictions. The Greek word translated here as agony signifies a strife or combat, not that there could be any opposition or contrariety in the interior of Christ, whose human will was always perfectly subject to his divine will and the sensitive part to reason. Yet inasmuch as he was truly man, his human nature dreaded all those sufferings which at that time were represented to his soul, and which in a few hours he was to undergo. His sweat became as drops of blood. This has sometimes happened, though in a lesser degree, to persons under extraordinary grief, if we believe Aristotle in his book on animals. By sending Christ away to Herod, Pilate not only extricated himself from the importunities of the Jewish priests, but moreover obeyed the Roman law in that particular which forbade anyone to be condemned by a governor to whom he was not the subject. It is evident from the behavior of Herod on this occasion that he was far from believing him to be that seditious person he was represented, otherwise he would have undoubtedly treated his prisoner with less ridicule and paid more serious attention to the accusation of his enemies. Herod has not treated him as a criminal or one worthy of death, he only derided him as a fool. Had there been any cause to punish him, he would have not failed to have done it himself or commanded him to be put to death. It was a very common punishment among the Jews to scourge those who had committed crimes for which death would have been too severe. According to the laws of the Hebrews in Deuteronomy 25:3, the number of blows could not exceed 39. Pilate dares not to condemn Jesus to death because he believes him innocent, yet not to disoblige the people and magistrates who demanded his death, he takes a middle way, which, as usual in such cases, satisfies neither party. He neither saves the innocent victim nor satisfies justice. In lieu of one punishment, Jesus suffers two. He is at length both scourged and crucified. In meeting the women of Jerusalem on the way of the cross, Christ is saying, "If you knew the evils that threaten and must soon fall upon your city, upon yourselves, and upon your children, you would preserve your tears to deplore your own misfortunes. My death is for the good of mankind, but it will be fatal to your nation, because you have been pleased to make it so. In the ruin of Jerusalem, which is at hand, happy shall they be who have no children. They shall save themselves the grief of seeing their sons and daughters perish miserably, suffering as many deaths as they have children to die." By speaking of the green wood and the dry wood, the green wood signifies persons of virtue and sanctity, and the dry wood the wicked who bring forth no fruit, and who, like dry wood, are fit to be cast into the fire. In other words, if they be thus cruel with me, how will they treat you? Calvary is a place at a small distance from Jerusalem where condemned malefactors were beheaded. So Christ, as a malefactor, dies on Calvary for the redemption of all, that where sin abounded, grace might more abound. St. Athanasius says, "In this mountain, according to the Hebrew doctors, were interred the remains of our protoparent, Adam." "This day thou shalt be with me in paradise," that is, in a place of rest with the souls of the just, in the happy state of rest, joy, and peace everlasting. Christ was pleased by a special privilege to reward the faith and confession of the penitent thief with a full discharge of all his sins, both as to the guilt and punishment, and to introduce him immediately after death into the happy society of the saints, whose limbo, that is, the place of their confinement, was now made a paradise by our Lord's going thither. The soul of the good thief was that same day with Jesus Christ in the felicity of the saints, in Abraham's bosom, or in heaven, where Jesus was always present by his divinity, so says St. Augustine. St. Cyril says he entered heaven before all the patriarchs and prophets. St. John Chrysostom thinks that paradise was immediately opened to him and that he entered heaven as the first of mankind.